Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Hey, everyone. Have you been to the Organic Gardener Podcast website and signed up for our email list? If you go there, you will get my new PDF, 7 Awesome Ways to Find More Time in Your Garden. And it's just some tips that I've learned from listening to my amazing guests who are always sharing with us super effective ways to be a better gardener. So if you head over to the organicgardenerpodcast.com and enter your email, you'll get 7 awesome ways to find more time in your garden. You can also get a copy of our ebook of Organic Gardening Basics. And just all the show notes are there, all the links to our show. So, and I'll be sending out some Golden Seeds newsletters as I get them done. And of course, you'll get a special invitation to join the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook community. Hope to see you there. Like, are you actually right in New York City growing, raising chickens?
I am in New York City. I'm in a part of New York City that's like kind of a greener part. So I'm not like in, you know, all concrete, but yes, definitely
in New York City. Cause I, like, even though I'm in Montana, I grew up on Long Island.
Okay.
So I know the city pretty good, but so I'm just super excited to talk to you today. So
great.
Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. I am just super excited to introduce my guest. Our featured guest today is Dr. Maya Sheetree-Klein, who's written this amazing book called The Dirt Cure, Growing Healthy Kids with Food Straight from Soil. And so we all know that healthy soil has been a major theme on my show and pretty much the, you know, key to everything as far as growing earth-friendly food and gardening and caring for our environment. So I'll let Dr. Maya tell us a little bit about herself and her book and just all the amazing things she's got going on here, and we'll go from there. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Okay, I should have asked you ahead of time. Do I call you Dr. Maya or do I call you Dr. Sheetree-Klein?
Dr. Maya's fine.
Okay. Okay. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, Dr. Maya.
Well, I am an integrative pediatric neurologist in New York City. I treat both adults and kids who have chronic health issues. And a lot of times that means treating them with, you know, for physical issues, but also looking at kind of emotional and spiritual things too. And that really brought me on a journey to plants and how plants can, and nature can be a really important part of our health and our healing. So that brought me to growing food. It brought me to learning about soil and healthy soil and how the earth's microbiome is connected to ours. And you know, it's been a really amazing connection to make and really very transformative for my patients.
Well, I think I was telling you in the pre-chat, but I have just been engrossed in your book. I've been reading it over my summer vacation. So, but I was just like right before this, I was just trying to finish it up. And there's just so much great information in there. And as a teacher, you know, I see these things with students and especially, you know, a big one for me, I look at is how much sitting time we have the kids doing compared to healthy, but also like in our classrooms this year, and I guess there's a big movement now called breakfast after the bell. So the kids are eating breakfast. Like my kids actually ate in my classroom this year, which was a bit of a challenge. It was fun, but it got me to introduce composting because I sure couldn't, you know, just out of habit, I couldn't just throw all that away. So we had a compost bin. We tried a worm bin for a while. So I learned a lot there. So it's definitely something I'm super proud of. And then I also ran the garden club with another teacher this year. So,
nice.
You know, definitely all big things that I am passionate about in there. And it's just a great, it's so full of informative, like real science. I find a lot of my guests and my listeners and different people talk about the challenges of having actual science to back them up. So I mean, your book is just packed full of You know, I mean, you're an amazing doctor. I just look at your biography and credentials. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Oh,
so,
you.
I don't know. I do always kind of start the show asking about your very first gardening experience. You know, like, were you a kid? Were you an adult? Who were you with? Where'd you grow? Like, are you from New York? What was your first gardening experience?
My first gardening experience in my life was when I was a child. I didn't like tomatoes, and my mother really wanted me to like tomatoes. And she thought if she helped me, if we together grew a garden and grew our own tomatoes, that I couldn't help but love fresh tomatoes. So we did it very traditional, you know, back then, very conventional, I should say. You know, we tilled part of our backyard and, you know, planted the tomatoes and put the fertilizer in and did the whole process, you know, with, you know, we planted other things too. Mm-hmm. And I think I must have been, gosh, like 6, 7 years old, maybe somewhere around there. And we did the whole garden and we got the tomatoes and, you know, my mother cut them up and served them to me and I took a bite and I said, I like tomatoes, but just not today. And that's basically what I kept saying to her. So I did love everything from the garden, but it took me a while. Actually, it took me until I spent a summer in Italy eating the tomatoes there in the Mediterranean, as spoiled as that may sound. But that really sold me on tomatoes. And ever since then, I've loved tomatoes. But beginning with that gardening experience, I really did learn that I love to grow and I felt really connected to the plants. And, you know, we grew a garden most years through until I was in high school, and they were really productive gardens. So those were my first gardens was as a child.
Awesome. That's so interesting. And it makes me like when I was a kid, I would not eat a raw tomato for the life of me. I loved anything with tomatoes, tomato sauce, mm-hmm. tomatoes on sandwiches, tomatoes anywhere. But like to actually eat a tomato, I would look at my brother and I'd be like, no way. How are you even doing
that? Yeah, because they're mushy. No, they're mushy. Well, the texture, for me, it was definitely, I like the smell of them. Like there is nothing like the smell of a fresh tomato that's just picked.
Right.
And even the leaves, like I just could sit and smell that of a tomato plant all day long. I love it. But, you know, when I was a kid, I was so sensitive to the texture, that kind of soft, mushy texture. So I was really having these particular like beefsteak tomatoes, these heirloom tomatoes that I had in Italy that made me realize they could be really firm and not mushy and gushy. And then once I was sold on eating them, I could eat really almost any kind of tomato and enjoy it. I mean, I always tell people, and that's something I talk about in the Dirt Cure as well, is it can take up to 30 tries with a new food for a kid to start to like it. So that's a lot of tries. And most people give up after 1, 2, 3, 5 tries, but it could take literally up to 30 tries. And then, you know, a child will start to accept it. So I think it's really important to always remember that, you know, just because at one point someone doesn't like something doesn't mean you don't keep trying, whether it be in different ways or in the same ways, because sometimes it's just about sort of getting used to it and feeling, you know, kind of feeling more comfortable with whatever the taste, texture, and so on might be.
You know, I went to a training right after school got out this year, and the last workshop I got to go to was a gardening workshop, and it was geared towards pre-K, elementary, preschools more, even though there were like 3 preschool teachers and the rest of the room was, you know, elementary through high school educators. But anyway, the point was they talked about exposure to foods, and they, you know, they definitely touched on, we don't want to be wasting food here, but just exposing kids to food doesn't necessarily mean them tasting it, you know, giving them opportunity, having it on the table, having other kids talk about mm-hmm. liking it and just, you know, or even using it for like tracings or for, we made these little garden plot sandwiches and just, you know, maybe they're going to eat the radish. Maybe they don't want to taste the radish, but they'll put it on that thing and then they'll eat the peas or the other things. So definitely. And then, you know, as an educator, we talk about kids and reading. Some kids have to hear something 700 times mm-hmm. before they get it. So 30 times doesn't sound so big to me.
Yeah. You know, so. And I think you're very right that, like, you know, and this is sort of a way that I talk about connecting with plants. and how healing that is people think the only way that you can have healing when you connect with plants is to consume them, right? Like you're eating the food and you're getting the nutrition. But actually, like, one of the examples I like to use is like giving flowers to people, right? Like, aww. When someone's happy, they're celebrating, or they're sad, or they've lost someone they love, you know, any number of reasons, we might give flowers to them. And that really transforms how they feel. And so we know that when we exchange plants with each other, or when we give flowers, these are just very accessible ways to change how we feel through plants. And there's a lot of ways that kids can do that, you know, whether it be growing things, whether it be all the things that you mentioned, right? Like enjoying them with art, or composting, or any number of ways, climbing a tree, right? These are all ways that we're gaining benefit from plants and from the natural world. And those are all very healing. It doesn't have to be consuming, you know, the plant in order to have the benefit. Although obviously that is a way, an important way, but sometimes, just as you said, by starting, you know, with step one, like everything else will follow.
I love that. So then how did you end up learning how to garden organically? Was it in Italy? Because you said, like, when you started out with your parents, it was kind of more conventional. Or did your parents eventually embrace the organic method? Or where? How did you learn?
Well, actually, you know, I started to learn once I was a doctor, once I was a mother. I started to learn about some of the issues around pesticides. And, you know, I think both from a scientific standpoint and from an intuitive standpoint as a mother, I didn't want to eat food that, you know, that had potentially toxic chemicals, you know, sprayed on it or around it. And I didn't like that also what we were doing to, you know, insects, animals, and so on. And of course, I knew about things like the microbiome, which is this community of organisms that lives both in and on our bodies, but also in the soil and on the plants. And there's this microbiome that we share, right? All these bacteria and other organisms in the soil and around the plants. So I didn't want to impact that. So I decided that I wanted to grow my own food in whatever way I could. Obviously in New York City, it wasn't that simple. And I tried a lot of different methods, including inside my apartment, which was interesting. We had a big aphid attack in our apartment because I decided to try to grow tomato plants inside. That was unsuccessful. But ultimately, when I started to grow outdoors, because I had a green space behind my office that I really had to actually convert into a healthy gardening space, because the soil was dust. It was had not been taken care of in any way. There were huge vines growing. And so I really had to kind of unearth in a certain way a lot of what had been going on, sort of a lack of care and a lack of nice community in that space for a long time, by just building the soil, using kind of permaculture methods. And then I started growing things. And in the beginning, it was so interesting because there were plants growing there. And I had, you know, I remember very specifically, actually, I had these beautiful squash plants and zucchini plants, and the vines were everywhere growing up the fence, and it was just so gorgeous and verdant. And then I started to see them wilt, and I was really confused what was going on. And it turned out that I had squash borers. Which was very, very distressing. And of course, the first thing I wanted to do was kill off those borers because they were ruining my gorgeous plants. And of course, you know, when I looked online, everything was talking about poisons and injecting it into the plant. And my instinct initially was, yes, like, I'm killing those things off. And then I was like, wait a minute, hold on. The whole point of this is to, like, you know, have this garden be organic, and I don't want to use these chemicals. What else can I do? And it took more searching, but you know, what it said was you have to actually go in, cut the stem, and fish out the borer because it's blocking, you know, water to get to the rest of the plant. And so what I did was I went near the roots of all my squash plants with a little knife, and I cut it out and I yanked out the little squash borers and, you know, covered that area with soil so that it could, you know, heal and re-root. And ultimately, I saved most of those plants without using any pesticide or any chemical at all. And it was such a good lesson because I think there's this, you know, initially we do feel like I'm at war with those things. You know, I don't want anything to kill off my plants. But then, you know, I really had to remember, like, we're all in relationship with each other. And while, yeah, I don't want those borers to destroy my nice squash plants, I'm not going to take this slash and burn kind of approach to do that. And, you know, that really just kind of cemented my commitment to working in natural ways with the plants to have them be as healthy as possible. You know, and sometimes I lose plants because I'm not going to use chemicals. That does happen sometimes.
Yep. And I've had a few guests talk about, like, even sacrificing one plant, and like, if all the aphids are on that one plant, a lot of times they'll stay on that one plant and leave the rest of your plants away. And sometimes you just lose that crop. And just, I love that advice. So, do you want to talk more about diet and healthy food in your book, or where do you want to go?
Well, I can, you know, I can talk about food. Do you have anything specific that you want to know about?
I guess I'm just thinking about my listeners, what they would want to learn from your book, because you talk a lot about, you know, like, one of the big things I picked up from your book that I started doing was, and other people have suggested it to me, but I don't know why, when I read it in your book, like, I, you know, am totally a sweet craving, you know, I get those sweet cravings, and people have always said, try some green tea, but there was something about reading it in your book that made it, like, I was always like, seriously, I'm going to have a brownie, or I'm going to have sweet tea, and you think I'm going to pick some tea or something, or ice cream at night or something, but it really, like, I don't know, it worked. And so what I, one thing I've been doing is just putting it in a jar instead of trying to make a whole container every, and then fitting this container in my fridge. Like, I just take like a quart jar and make like one cup of sweet iced tea because it's summer right now. So I don't know, just like, it seemed like your food talked a lot about, you know, allergies and diet to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that when it comes to sweets, there's actually a lot of ways to kind of transform. Like, we're in a very sugar obsessed food culture right now. And, you know, sometimes, like, if you, you know, we think about things like, you know, candy or sweets, but even if you look at something like a yogurt, some yogurts have as much sugar as a can of soda. When you look at the number of grams of sugar. So, there's a lot of hidden places that we're getting sugar, like bread also, and tomato sauce, where there are corporations that actually are looking at PET scans of the brain and looking at what areas light up, what areas light up our pleasure centers, or what kind of foods in what ratio make our pleasure centers the most active. And that means a lot of sugar and a lot of salt. And so a lot of processed foods actually are filled with sugar. And so there's a whole sort of a need, because sugar actually is very inflammatory in the body. So a lot of people have autoimmune conditions, or even things like ADHD or migraines, you know, any of those kinds of things will potentially worsen, you know, with a lot of sweet, a lot of sugar. So pulling away from sugar can be really important, actually can really help with energy, can help with chronic pain. It can help, like I said, with autoimmune conditions, and more clear thinking. And so what the kind of things I recommend in terms of cutting back sugar is, first of all, getting rid of processed sugar as much as possible. So if I'm having something sweet, then I always try to make sure that it also is nutrient dense at the same time. And that could mean it's fruit, but it could also mean it's raw honey. It could also mean it's, you know, real maple syrup or date sugar, or blackstrap molasses. All of these are foods that are very nutrient dense, and they actually have their own antioxidant properties, and different kinds of nutrients. So it's not just taking away from the body, but also giving back at the same time. Another thing that I recommend when it comes to sweets is having something like cinnamon with it, because cinnamon stabilizes blood sugar levels. And a lot of times, I mean, I actually think it's interesting because lots of sweet things might actually include cinnamon in the recipe, because they taste good together. But it so happens that cinnamon is very good for keeping the blood sugar levels more stable. The other thing that I recommend is including in the diet bitters. And so people think bitters and they think, wow, like I would hate that. But coffee is actually a bitter tonic. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to have their dessert without having a cup of coffee, because, you know, it balances, right? It balances the flavors. But also it so happens that bitter tonics like coffee, but also like hot chocolate, that's a really good dark chocolate and not overly sweetened, or even orange peel, right? Like orange peel or lemon peel, which could be included in a dessert. All of those help stabilize blood sugar. They help stabilize appetite. They help stabilize insulin levels. So it's really good and really helpful to kind of always be thinking about the quality of the sweet, as well as, you know, so eating it in moderation, making sure it's from a good natural source, and pairing it with something bitter or something like cinnamon or orange peel that will help stabilize blood sugar levels.
Wow. A lot of great information there. I saw a nutritionist several years ago and have on and off. And one of the big things she told me was to put molasses in my coffee. So I go through big stages where sometimes I drink it with milk, sometimes, but a lot of times I'll put that molasses in my coffee. And so, and she talked about that too. That was a way to get my mineral and my sugar at the same time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's interesting because my husband makes these oatmeal cookies and he's always putting cinnamon in them. And in a lot of ways, his oatmeal cookies truly are more nutritious than a lot of, like the processed cereals, like you talk in your book about, you know, feeding your kids processed cereals and looking at that. You know, we always think, oh, cereal. And then the other one that I've really been struggling with since I started my podcast is the milk, drinking whole milk instead of 2% milk, eating real butter, you know, like, cause I grew up in that generation where like, I haven't put butter on my vegetables, I think since I was like 12, like that's always been like something I'm like, ooh, stay away from butter. And then now I've been trying to like actually get myself to put butter. Cause I talked to this one woman from the Weston A. Price Foundation, and she was saying that that actually does some kind of chemical reaction with the vegetable to help you get more nutrients out of it. So getting myself to look at healthy fats a little bit differently.
Yeah. Fat is probably one of the most important things that we can do, eating good nutrient dense, healthy fats, not processed fats. It actually helps with satiety. So people think if you eat fat, you'll get fat, but actually fat, eating good, healthy fats will make you less hungry. So it's actually a way to ultimately eat less and, you know, kind of stabilize again, like stabilize your blood sugar levels and stabilize your appetite. It's also really important for the brain. So our brain is made up about 70% of fat, and each neuron, the cell membrane of each neuron, which is a really important part of like keeping your brain healthy, is there are as many as 200 different fatty acids that make up the cell membrane. So you really want to have a lot of different diverse fats in the diet, and the kind of fats that I recommend, you always want to have them be as nutrient dense as possible. If they're animal related, then you want to make sure those animals were raised outdoors on pasture, getting sunshine, because you actually can have, and we know this from studies, you get vitamin D it's a fat soluble vitamin. So you get vitamin D in, let's say, your milk or your butter or even your meat if that animal was outdoors, or your eggs, right? Egg yolks, because it's a fat soluble vitamin. If the animal was raised outdoors, then there's natural vitamin D, and we know that. And that means we get more vitamin D as well when we eat, you know, either their eggs or milk or so on, or their meat. So healthy fats, the omega-3s that, you know, everyone knows about now, I think the essential fatty acids are also important fats. Even cholesterol is very healthy, you know, when it's unprocessed cholesterol. So, you know, we've sort of had this demonizing of fats, and ultimately in processed food, if it says low fat, it probably means there's a lot more sugar, but really our brains don't love a lot of sugar. And certainly don't like that big burst of sugar, because remember I said it causes inflammation, but what our brains and our bodies do like is a lot of healthy fats. So I'm always recommending things like grass-fed butter, egg yolks, right? So eggs, pastured eggs. If people drink milk and they tolerate it, then having whole milk. The best is if it's unhomogenized, like cream-lined milk, because it's even the fats can be very delicate, and the homogenization process can actually potentially damage them. So getting cream-lined means that, you know, it's more likely to be you know, fat in the best and healthiest way for us. But even whole milk is a little bit processed, and I talk about that at length in my book. But it's still way better than getting the skim or the 1%. And all of these different fats, coconut oil, avocado, all of these different kinds of fats are really, really important for our brains and our bodies, and ultimately really make us healthier and not the other way around.
So, you know, like, since I've had my podcast, like, and then after teaching and having the kids in the classroom drinking the 2% milk every day that they gave the kids every day, I just look at them and I think, is this really the healthiest thing for kids in schools? Do you work with schools at all, in school cafeterias, and nutritionists that way?
Well, I don't directly work with them, but part of why I wrote the book, you know, you mentioned that a lot of people are having a hard time because it's finding the science. And so what I did with my book was I wanted it to be really accessible so that any person could read it. I actually have 10 and 11 year olds that are my patients who, you know, have emailed me. This is their favorite book, you know, that they read the book, which is so sweet. And little kids who have listened to the book on tape with their moms, you know,
In the car and stuff?
Yeah, you know, so that's just been like great and really, really adorable and made me really happy. But at the same time, I also included well over 700 references, scientific references in the back of the book. So that, and they're almost all in the form of links to the scientific abstract. So that everyone could see, you know, if they wanted to give it to their doctor, they wanted to show it to, like, you know, their school board, or if they wanted to show it to, like, their you know, questioning you know, mother-in-law,
spouse.
Right, or spouse, yeah. That they could see there's a tremendous amount of science, because that was something I thought was so frustrating, even as a physician, was, you know, people would say, well, there's not really science, you know, there's not really science, or organic is just a fad, or, you know, anything along those lines. And, you know, the truth of the matter is it's not a fad. It's very science based. And there's a lot of things about eating nutrient dense food from healthy soil and not putting chemicals on it and thinking about all of the living creatures and organisms that are involved in the process of, you know, us getting our food. You know, because, like, as you said, sometimes people will sacrifice some of their crop and say, well, some of my crop is going to go to the bugs. And, like, actually, there's a reason. Like, they're not our enemies. Like, we all have a purpose here, I think. You know, I really do think so. And I think, you know, we're learning that with bacteria, right? We used to think bacteria were all bad for a very long time. You know, sterile was good and anything with germs was terrible. And it turns out germs or bacteria, which we now are calling microbes, right, because we're spinning things a little differently, are actually beneficial to us. And that's fantastic to like know that these things that we thought were bad, actually we need. And I think that's true of what we call pests, right, and what we call weeds. I mean, I look at how people poison dandelions. You know, they spray their lawns to get rid of like dandelion and red clover. And these are actually nutrient dense and medicinal foods that I harvest from my yard. I'm the one in my neighborhood who has, you know, dandelions growing everywhere. And I'm so happy about it. And it's funny because, you know, everyone else's lawns are pristine and green and there's nothing else there. And I want it to look like a meadow, you know, and I use those things. I mean, I'm harvesting dandelions, I'm harvesting the yellow clover, I'm harvesting violets and making herbal tonics from those things.
Awesome. And you're doing this in New York City. So it shows listeners that they can do this, or somewhere in New York in an urban area that they can do this, you know, just about anywhere, or get started, or at least, you know, contribute to maybe somebody else's garden on the corner or something.
Definitely. I mean, I think there are a lot of community gardens, but like, even if you're, you know, people all the time will say, well, I'm in the city and, you know, there, find a sunny window, grow your own herbs, you know, grow some basil, mm-hmm. grow some rosemary, grow a little mint. Mint is like very, very resilient, you know? So that's one thing to do. You can just put a pot of something, you know, or grow a plant indoors. That's one thing. Finding a community garden is another way to get to grow and put your hands in dirt. You know, there's a lot of things like in New York City, we have like in our botanical garden, they have a family garden where actually people can have their own little plot and come grow, or you can go and start to, you know, get your hands dirty there. So there's a lot of different ways to grow and connect with soil, connect with the earth, volunteering for, you know, a park. So
I think we're supporting like your farmers markets.
Absolutely.
And your farmers that are growing. You know what I wanted to ask you about that you were talking about? That you were digging in your backyard, and I'm just amazed that you dug up the roots and were able to get those bugs out there without killing the plant.
No, I didn't dig the roots up. What I did was I found in the stem where the borer was, like I had to slit the stem, and I found where the borer was. I fished it out with my knife, which was somewhere between really...
Splitting the stem didn't kill the plant?
No, because you have to then cover it with soil, so it basically heals that way. Yeah.
I thought that was so fascinating.
Yeah, I wouldn't have done it if I hadn't read it. You know, I mean, other people had done it, and that's how they saved the plant. And it didn't work for every plant, but it did work for many of them.
Before we get to the root of things, we're going to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. My good friend, Dacia Daly from Simply Josephine.
It's all about handcrafted soaps and apron love here at Simply Josephine. Located in Montana's beautiful Tobacco Valley, I create everything from my home studio. Currently, I offer 6 different kinds of handmade soaps, 3 different salves, using wildcrafted plant medicine from right here in our beautiful valley. In addition to my body care products, I also make several styles of aprons. Everything is available at simplyjosephine.com. We want to share a little love with the Organic Gardener Podcast listeners. We're offering 15% off. Use code OGP15 at checkout. Thanks and have a beautiful day. simplyjosephine.com.
Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like the other Green Future growers. Well, the Organic Gardener Podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or type book into the search bar at the organicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get listening to your first audiobook today. at this point in my show, I kind of get to this thing I call getting to the root of things, which is kind of like, it's kind of like a lightning round, like just whatever's the first thing that comes to your head. And like the one question, like, do you have a least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there something that you have to like kind of force yourself to get out there and do?
Well, my garden right now, we have a lot of porcelain berry vine, which is a kind of invasive. And although I try not to actually feel like I'm, you know, I think there's a reason that certain invasives come to a particular area, and it has to do with more with a deficiency in the soil or in Absolutely. That ecosystem rather than, you know, an invader coming. But obviously, like, it also is a really aggressive vine, which chokes out all the plants. So I do kind of have to pull it again and again and again. And it's definitely not my favorite, because if I go away, you know, I tend to have to travel a lot for work. So if I'm gone for, you know, certain number of days, I'll come back and it'll be trying to choke and kill off the plants. But it is also really meditative to pull it out. I mean, I can sit for a few hours and just sit pulling that vine back and kind of protecting my little circle where I'm growing. And, you know, it does feel incredibly meditative, even though it is not my favorite thing to do.
I love that. So then on the flip side, what is your favorite activity to do in the garden?
You know, it's funny. I mean, I don't know if I'd say it's an activity, but I would say the thing that gives me the most joy in my garden is when perennials come back. For me, that's just like, I feel like it's such a miracle, you know, when everything's sort of dead and looks kind of like, you know, right? Because like winter and even early spring, nothing looks like it's ever going to come back again. And then all of a sudden, my ferns are coming back. My, you know, chamomile is coming back. My echinacea is coming back. I have all these different really lovely plants. My strawberries are coming back. It's sort of hard to describe how, like, it's like seeing a friend I haven't seen in a long time and like knowing, oh, like they're showing up again, you know? I just love that. Mm-hmm. That's like the best moment, I feel like, of every year.
And a lot of times they multiply. Like Mike planted me some echinacea plants a few years ago and they've been multiplying, and just seeing that, I love that too. Like herbs are my favorite thing to plant. And they're also like the first things that come up, like the chives are one of the first things that comes up for the pollinators in the spring. So it's always nice that way too.
Yeah.
I'm so curious about like how you have chickens in this urban neighborhood. Like how do you do that part?
Well, the, you know, New York City, first of all, I wanted to have my own eggs, and I wanted to know that the chickens were being raised in the best way possible. And for me, you know, I thought, well, I want to do that myself. You know, I want to make it happen. So I will always take on a big project, and ended up building the coop from scratch with a very skilled friend. Which was a big job, and raising the chicks in my living room of my apartment at the time, which was also very comical in its way. And then, you know, I checked out obviously the laws in New York City, and it turns out that you could have as many hens as you want as long as you have no roosters. So, you know, I tried to get female chicks, but we ended up having a little bit of a rooster mishap, because one of the chicks turned out to be a rooster, which we found out when it started crowing. And so Honeysuckle turned out to be a rooster, and it was not so easy to home Honeysuckle. But I had promised my daughter that, you know, none of our chickens would ever be eaten, and none of them would be, you know, we would never be involved in killing them. So we really had to find a home, and we did. But other than that, I mean, having chickens is actually,
I want to hear about raising the chickens in your apartment though, because we got 4 chicks this year and none of them made it. Like, I was just like so disheartened, and I was so surprised. Like, I'm like, why aren't we putting the chicks in the hen house? And Mike's like, we can't put them out there. It's too cold. They have to be under this light. And we had them in a box. And then he moved. I can't remember, like, one of them, it was on top of our washing machine with a big light over it. And then when he eventually moved two of them out into the chicken house, they still didn't make it. So I'm so curious to see, like, what was successful in your apartment? How did you keep these chicks alive in your apartment?
Well, we had a heat lamp, you know, as we were told, and you know, we handled them a lot so that they got used to human touch, and we kept them there until they were kind of adolescent. It was gross. I mean, in the beginning they were really cute, but by the time they were like adolescent chicks, you know, it was like not pleasant to have them in my apartment. So, but the coop wasn't done yet. So once the coop was done, then we brought them out there and it was warm. I mean, we did it in a warm weather, warmish weather. And I also made sure that I had enough chicks, like I had eight chicks, so that they could all kind of roost and keep right. each other warm. But yeah, I've had chicks twice now, and so far, you know, so good. But I don't think it's that hard, but it does take a lot of they do take a lot of attention in the beginning. And then really, like, as chickens, they keep themselves, they're pretty self-sufficient. You have to make sure they have their food and their water. We do deep composting, so we just put down wood chips like every week, and then once a year or twice a year maybe we shovel it all out and compost it. But we're not constantly cleaning it out, and the chickens are fine with that. So, you know, one of the biggest challenges with chickens is, of course, predators. And so, you know, that's actually gotten, we had a hawk get one of our chickens. We had a dog off leash actually kill one of our chickens kind of recently. You know, but most of the time, like, the chickens are really pretty self-sufficient and do their own thing. And, you know, we've even been able to go away, you know, for a week and maybe have someone let the chickens out. They have an enclosed run, but it's like nicer for them if they get to go be out and walk around, you know, for a couple hours. So we might have someone come do that, but the chickens, like, can do their week. And of course we're getting fresh eggs.
Yeah, we have one chicken, one rooster, and one duck right now. We've had up to like a dozen chickens at a time over the last 10 or 15 years. But we got those new chicks this year. It's the first time we ever had baby chicks, and it was just hard to, I don't know what happened. They didn't make it. So I was just curious about that. And then especially growing in the city. So, but I know you're going to, you got to go. And so I'll just ask a couple of these last questions.
Sure.
So, do you have, like, what's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
The best gardening advice. You know, there's a lot of things about gardening that are not so apparent. And one of the things that I end up doing often is if I buy seedlings, you know, I end up leaving them for longer than I really intend to, because I'm, you know, obviously also seeing patients and, you know, yep. being a mom and doing a million other things. So, you know, what I learned from a very dear friend of mine who's a wonderful gardener was to very gently untangle the roots once you take the seedlings out. And so, you know, they don't just kind of knot all up together. And there's a name for that, which I can't remember, but that was like pretty basic advice, and maybe it should have been obvious, but you know, I didn't always know that, you know, so way back when I learned that, it made a big difference in putting in my seedlings and having them, you know, grow and survive well.
Nice. That's an awesome golden seed for listeners. How about a favorite tool that you like to use? If you could move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
What tool? Well, I love my little trowel. I love that. I really like to have my hands dirty. I like sitting in my garden. Like, I literally come in coated with dirt. My hands, my nails, my clothes, I mean, my arms, my face. I come in like I am like breaded. And so the trowel is like right there with me. I'm right up in the soil. And I like that kind of being really close to the dirt. And I like, you know, I like kind of having a tool that allows me to kind of maneuver well. So that's what I like the most.
Nice. How about a favorite recipe you like to cook? What's like your favorite thing to make out of the garden?
You know, I would say I love growing greens and I love eating greens, all kinds of leafy greens, Swiss chard or kale or collards or even Brussels sprouts. And so, you know, I'll just like take any combination of those. I even use the, you know, the leaves from broccoli plants or cauliflower plants because those taste really good. Yeah. Like I just hated the idea
that
all I could get was like one broccoli, you know, one head of broccoli from the whole season. And sometimes like I didn't get such great broccoli, but then it turned out like I could eat the leaves and they tasted so good. So I'll just get all those different things, whatever I have available at that time. And then I just saute them, cut them up and saute them in some olive oil. And I add a little bit of garlic, fresh garlic at the end, and a touch of umeboshi plum vinegar, which is sort of salty and a good umami taste. And then, you know, everyone loves that, including my kids. Everyone kind of fights over those greens.
I'm definitely going to have to try that. How about a favorite internet resource? Is there anywhere you like to go on the internet?
Trying to think about an internet resource that I use. I don't think I reliably go to any particular resource on the internet. But what I do love, I will say, is there's an app I found recently, which was to identify plants that I didn't know, because I love to forage also. So I always like to look for, you know, plants that might be edible or I could use for different things. And so there's something called Plantifier, and you can actually, it's an app, and you can actually take a picture, and then there's an expert on the other side that, you know, will look at it and tell you what they think it is.
So
that I thought was pretty cool.
You might be interested. There's a Facebook group that has an insect identifier, and usually within, you know, a few minutes or an hour or so, you'll have an identification if there's an insect you're trying to find. Okay, last one would be a favorite reading material, like a book or something to put on the bookshelf to go next to The Dirt Cure, Growing Healthy Kids with Food Straight from the Soil.
Gosh, there are a lot of great books out there about growing. I'm going to name a few books that I like. Rodale has an amazing book on organic gardening that I like.
Yep.
There's books about beekeeping I think are great. I've tried beekeeping. It's not easy. So like I definitely recommend, you know, having someone experienced coach you through, but we definitely, you know, need to support our bee population. So even if you're not going to keep bees, knowing what bees love, you know, and growing flowers that are good for, and plants that are good for bees is really important, as well. So that's another thing I highly recommend. And then I love, Elliot Coleman, you know, who's written about four season harvest and growing more vegetables with kind of a permaculture organic kind of approach.
Awesome. You know, I was thinking of, speaking of books, there's a woman who's like one of the biggest people in the flower or growing organic flower movement who just came out with a book about like her experiences on Floret Farm. And she talks about her beginning was very similar to what you said about giving people flowers. Like she had her big aha moment and realized this was what she was meant to do when she gave a small bouquet of sweet peas to a neighbor and just they started crying. And it was like a first bouquet she sold and just like how much that touched that person's life. And so I think what you said, like even if people feel like food is too hard, you know, vegetables, there's definitely a learning curve and, you know, you worry. But flowers, I love to grow flowers because if they just sit in the yard, if I don't harvest them in time, you know, I'm still getting the beauty out of them and they bring in the, so I think that's a great thing. So I know you have to go. So I told you I wouldn't go much longer. So do you just want to maybe have a tip or an inspirational quote to motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Well, I think the biggest thing I would say is knowing all the different ways that gardening really feeds us. It doesn't just feed us with food, but it feeds us with beauty. It feeds us emotionally, because being connected to nature is something that actually has been looked at in science and actually makes people feel happier. It makes people feel calmer, helps people sleep better, right? There's all these ways emotionally we feel better being around plants, and obviously appreciating their beauty and their scents and all of that. And then even, being exposed to all the organisms and bacteria and actually connecting directly to the earth just helps our bodies and our brains in a lot of different ways. And I go into it in a lot of depth in The Dirt Cure. But what I would just say is, don't be afraid to get dirty.
I love that. Do you want to tell listeners about your website and how to connect with you if they want to work with you, if they have children that are sick that maybe they'd like to? I mean, do you do online consulting if they're not in New York? And I do have a lot of listeners in New York.
Yeah, I do. I do, I do advise patients from all over the world, actually. And the best way to get in touch with me is to go to my website, where I actually will be posting many resources. And get on my newsletter. You can do that at drmaya@com, basically, drmaya.com. And so there's resources there. You can sign up for the newsletter. You'll get updates. And it's also, how you can connect with me if you wanted to, be a patient.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for sharing with us today. This was just lovely. I feel like I could talk to you for hours, and just, I feel like I learned a ton. I know my listeners are going to be excited to hear from this. I'm going to totally encourage them to check out your book and write a great review on Amazon. Don't forget.
Yeah, that would be great.
It's super important for authors.
Yeah, definitely. So thank you.
I will definitely get my review up this week. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I'm super excited to announce that I am finally going to launch my Facebook group, the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group. So I really want to hear about your journey, and I really hope that you will come there and share your questions, your successes, your challenges, your pictures, your, connect with the other listeners in the audience and, what's your vision for the future, or what's your vision for your garden, for your organic oasis? Are you planting flowers? What are you doing? What project are you taking on this spring, this summer? I really want to learn, what do you want to know? Is there, what kind of guests do you like? Who have you enjoyed? Who would you like to hear more of? What topics are you really enjoying? Is it raising honeybees or planting perennials, or, what kind of seeds are you looking for? Are they annuals, perennials? What kind of vegetables, what kind of herbs are you planting? What flowers? Do you have any questions that we can answer? What guests have you, liked the most? So what is there something you want me to find out? Like, I'm really gonna try to be as active in Facebook, the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook page and the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group. So if you're interested in learning more and reaching out and connecting with other people, especially, the great thing about it is all of a sudden, you might meet three people who are in your area. Just like since I started my podcast, I met Robin Kelson and Laura Behenna. So it was so fun to see them last week. And Pamela Lund, who, if you haven't heard her episode, she's just got a great story. Robin's been in the top 10 since she aired. But to meet these, people, and then I went to the Aero Conference and met more people that are living locally near me here in Montana that I never knew till I started my podcast. And so if you join the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group, you'll probably meet people in your area. And then maybe I'll be able to find some people from the other states, because I think I'm up to like state 20 or 21 still. So there's still more states that I haven't interviewed people from than states that I have. One of these days, I'm going to read that list and try to get some people, some listeners. Listeners always make great guests. I think you've all got more knowledge than you think to share, and some answer that somebody else has been looking for. So if you want to come on and share your gardening journey, I'm always looking. But today I really want to talk about, join our group, let me know, what can I do for you? Even if you don't want to do the Facebook thing, I totally understand. Or if you have another channel that you like, reach out to me, email me, go to the website. You know, you can connect with me. There's the Get in Touch page. There's a listener survey on there where you can, which basically is just easy questions about, what's your biggest challenge that I can help you with. But just most of all, I hope if you want to, you will come join the Facebook group, connect with me, and just let's change the world together. Thanks for listening, and remember to...